today on the Cooligans. In the first segment, we predict the first round of 32 for the Champions League. Are there any upsets? Can Real Madrid get beat again? Ooh, we talk about it.
And in segment two, we are joined by the one and only, the legend, Glenn Crooks, the former coach in New Jersey, Rutgers, former Carly Lloyd coach. He is currently the NYCFC radio announcer, and he hosts a show on Sirius XM FC, and he wrote a book, and we talk all about it. Also, in we have Rapid Reactions in segment three. A lot more things to talk about when it comes to American managers from New Jersey. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. Happy President's Day, everybody. But we also had, what a lovely, it's a lovely holiday. Yeah.
What an odd intro.
You know, people, everybody, they look at the calendar, they're like, when is President's Day coming
out?
Yeah,
we're all wondering. Only people buying mattresses or Toyotas okay. Give a about President's Day.
I take this day to praise whoever is the current president of the United States.
Yeah.
Which
you normally do every day of the week, but you go a little harder.
You know what? This is my Valentine's Day, realistically, where I could get to show love to the president. No, but on Valentine's Day, I got to do something fun that I hadn't done in a while.
Oh, my God. Hi, cover your children's ears, folks.
No. My wife and I went.
Uh-oh.
We went and did Zumba together.
Oh.
We did a Zumba class.
A what?
Zumba.
Is this like the dance workout?
Dance workout with all the ladies that are 50 and above. Uh-huh. Not all, but some.
Buddy, why don't you just eat ass like the rest of us? Why are you? What are you doing, man?
This is how couples
not
bond.
Not after the class, by the way. Terrible time.
This is how, you know, this is a nice bonding exercise.
Did you think you'd become this domesticated when we started the show?
No, I mean, I did swing dance in high school.
Right.
So I'm.
That's when you just.
This is.
You and three ladies.
This is.
You, no, it's when you and a partner go to a club and you dance with other people's partners.
Yes.
Yeah, so sometimes the four of you together.
That's what it is. No, I did.
You were like a ska band swing class?
Yeah, yeah. I did swing class. That was my elective in high school. I did that for 2 years.
Wait. Your high school had. This is why you have not adapted to the world.
Right.
You called your teachers.
I don't fit in at all.
You called your teachers by first name. You didn't get grades, and swing was an option.
That was an option. Yeah,
your high school did not prepare you for the real world at all. That is my theory. Every time you tell me a story about your high school, I'm like, this is why I think you're weird.
Right, and look, and you're so prepared for the real world.
I think I was prepared. I was prepared for the harshness of the world.
You got it all figured out.
I wouldn't say I got it all figured out, but I think I'm a little bit more. I was comfortable with the understanding of how the world worked.
I'm doing fine.
I think you're doing
pretty
good.
This isn't an opportunity.
Thanks to me, honestly.
I'm doing fine.
I think you swing class.
Swing class. I know how to dance swing. We would go into there used to be like a, I don't know if they still do this, but there was like a swing social that would happen. You know that in Central Park, that bridge where they film a lot of movie scenes and stuff like that.
By
the fountain and stuff like that. And under that like bridge, a group of swing dancers would go and they'd be.
So in high school, you signed up for a class where the top part of the class, like the grand finale, was meeting under a bridge?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a very nice bridge. but yes, I did Zumba. But this is what I wanted to mention. The Zumba class was basically all Dominican music. So the Zumba instructor is not Dominican, but she loved, like, it's like dembow, a lot of dembow songs, of like Omega. But then Bad Bunny has overtaken.
So you were perreando, basically.
That's right. And yeah. I think I was one of maybe three men in the class, of probably like 100 people. So
buddy, some of these guys got to get out there. You got so many single ladies out here.
So, I mean, if they're trying,
I would say if you're not into eating it, throwing ass is a better, is a good option. Get out there and watch a bunch of 50 something year olds.
How
throw
about
ass.
Get a guy like me that does both,
you know, get you a man that can do both.
So that was my Valentine's Day. Did you do anything?
I did. Yeah. Me and Donna, we've been together for, this was our 26th.
Valentine's Day.
Gotcha. Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm. So we don't do the let's go out to like a nice dinner. It sucks, right? Because they're rushing you out of a restaurant.
Sure.
It's like a pre-fixed meal. The chefs don't want to cook the 13th Chateaubriand or whatever they're making that day. You know what I mean? They're like, it's very much a money-making day for restaurants. It's not like I don't think you get like what a restaurant experience for me should. Like comes with like the ambiance of the restaurant, the pageantry of how maybe they serve the dish or if they make something table side. Like that to me is part of it. And you don't get any of that. So I tend to hate it. So what D and I like to do is go to places where like you don't need reservations. So we went to a place called Wayne and Sons, which is a Tex-Mex barbecue place that took over Miss Favela's spot in Williamsburg, which was the Brazilian spot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That place was great. Wow.
Well, the place was great. Yeah, it closed. Yeah, it sucks. But the only thing I didn't like about it is they played country music. And I'm sure there's people listening to us who love country music. I just sonically am not a big fan.
The Brazilian place didn't play country music.
No, now it's called Wayne and Sons. Yeah, yeah. It's a Tex-Mex place.
got it.
They had like queso dip, but it's like, real, it's not just Velveeta. You know what I mean? Like it's real queso dip. Mm-hmm. It's like everything about it was cool. The tacos were great. If you like Tex-Mex food, it's like if Yellow Rose wasn't so high end. Not that it is high end, but it kind of feels like
that.
It. Yellow Rose is like a kind of restarted the Tex-Mex craze in New York, you know?
Because
a lot of people are like, that's not authentic. Like they wanted authentic Mexico City style tacos. Mm-hmm. We got enough of those now. So Tex-Mex is back. But anyway, long story short, we went there, bro. The frozen margaritas are real. It's not like from a mix. We got a little schmizz. We had a little fun, you know? And then we went home and we threw some ass. You know what I mean?
Okay. You know? Good for you. We all zoomed in some way.
Yeah, our neighbors were like, could you close the windows? Is that possible?
Well, good for you.
Yeah,
good
absolutely. For you.
Okay, well, happy Valentine's Day.
It was a lot of fun. Shouts to everybody.
Everyone in love or not in love. You could be single. Take a day to love yourself.
Yeah, hey. Okay. All right. Play your favorite song. Play your favorite Enya track. Get yourself a nice warm bath, maybe a candle or two. Right.
We're not, you know.
Unless you use plugins and then don't use a bath. You know what I mean? Because that could be dangerous.
Butt plugins.
Sure. I don't know why you need to plug those bad boys in, but maybe there's a new love. Remember the guy who won the chess tournament because he had a vibrating plug?
Yes, I did hear that. Yeah. My hero. Yeah.
that guy won twice in the same competition.
Oh my God. You got ideas.
Yeah.
All right.
He's really slapping that clock a lot in that one moment.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. Hey. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We got a hot one today.
Are you excited for today's show?
Quite so, Alexis. Oh. Because we're going to be joined a little bit later by our dear friend, just soccer legend, New Jersey soccer legend, mm-hmm. the one and only Glenn Crooks. Glenn Crooks is the lead commentator for NYCFC, their radio crew. He's been obviously covering the team since its inception, and just a great dude, and wrote a new book. So we're going to talk about his new book in a little bit. So let's start today with Champions League. The round of 32 is coming up this week.
That's right. Can Real Madrid get embarrassed by Benfica again? Because, yo, if that happens, bro, it'll be absolutely hilarious.
This is the top topic.
Look, the round of 32 will expose which big clubs are frauds in disguise. But I think if you think Real Madrid is just going to outright win, you probably haven't been watching Real Madrid the last few months.
And here's the truth. They can, right? Even Jose Mourinho even said, like, yo, we wounded the kings of Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
And a wounded king is dangerous. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that kind of tells you even Mourinho's like, hey, we did it once. Don't expect me to do this over two legs.
I love when Mourinho was in Game of Thrones and spoke like that. Why? Yeah. Why?
He's kind of gotten this poetic in the last few years.
Sure.
You can see the quote here. I think as far as I'm concerned, I think he's even trying to, you know, lower expectations. Because, yes, they won, I believe, 4-2, if I'm not mistaken.
And they needed that last goal by the goalkeeper to get through.
Absolutely. And he sent the goalkeeper. It was like, scenes, right? Limbs, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. I think it's a great moment for Benfica. And Benfica, you know, a 38-time champion of the Portuguese league.
Mm-hmm.
They're clearly a storied club, and so many great players have come through there. But to ask them to beat Real Madrid over two legs is tough. So if we're going to predict the next 30, these sort of knockout rounds, this round of 32, my brain is saying probably Real Madrid, but I could see a world where Benfica can make it hard for them, especially at home.
Yeah, and the fact that it's the game Benfica won, the game that Benfica won, the context of it is like Benfica needed it a lot more. Mm-hmm. Real Madrid, I believe they had the opportunity to get into the top eight, if I'm not mistaken. So they had plenty of incentive to win the game, but Benfica needed it to just stay alive in Champions League. But this puts I think Real Madrid are in a weak sort of position, obviously with the injuries that they have. I think they're in a better place than they were just even before that last game against Benfica. But still, the drama around like stuff with Vinicius, the Mbappe. Like, I mean, I had seen the stat. I don't know if we talked about this already, but there was a stat that Mbappe, when he left PSG, they had a higher goal scoring average, mm-hmm. and then when he got to Real Madrid, they now have a lower goal scoring average with Mbappe.
Yeah.
So it's he. The data says that Mbappe makes your not necessarily makes your team worse. You score less.
Yeah, yeah.
When you have Mbappe on your team, even though he scores a whole lot of goals. Right.
That is how you win, though. By scoring more goals. So yeah.
So it is a little bit concerning. So I think given the, I know Mourinho's talking about like wounded kings or whatever. It's still like if Benfica go in and show that same kind of urgency that they did in the last game, I think they have a real shot to move on.
This is what I think you lose by not having a consistent manager across the season when you are a Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Is on paper, you put the 2-11s up and you think no contest, right? Real Madrid all day. And I think most people are walking into this, including probably, you know, Jose Mourinho, thinking they already have all the leverage. They have the upper hand by virtue of just the talent Real Madrid have.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Champions League, sometimes it is like what you've just said is the team that wants it a little more. And if Benfica show up and they're much more of a unified, you know, presence, if the 11 are all on the same page, if they're gutting it out a little more, if they want it a little more, there's a very good chance they could squeak past Real Madrid. And we're talking about Real Madrid, who've won this competition 15 times. But as of right now, and I was there the last time they won at Wembley. But right as of right now, they didn't even make it into the top eight. So it's not necessarily like they're walking in as the quote-unquote kings of this tournament. Yes, they've won it more than anyone else. They probably will have a lot more confidence saying we can win it again. But a Benfica could absolutely hurt this team. I don't know if over two legs they can do it, but I could see it wouldn't shock me completely if that happens.
Yeah, and then the Rodrigo has a red, right? Or it says he has a hamstring injury, but I think he got the red in the last game.
So he's suspended for this.
It's suspended. I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is out front with a hamstring injury, but I think it's the red. But also the concern is Bellingham. I mean, look, they're players that are out. Asensio's out. Militao is out. Bellingham as well. Bellingham is I don't know how serious this injury is. It's saying he's going to come back in early April, but oh yeah, he pulled up a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I remember. If there were any time for Benfica to win across two legs, this is the opportunity. This is a very weekend of Real Madrid. With that said, I'm saying all that.
Yeah.
I still think Real Madrid
are probably going to
get through. But we shall see what happens with
that. What do you think about PSG Monaco?
PSG Monaco, this shouldn't be too much of a convo because Monaco, they can't even hold a candle to PSG. I mean, even PSG,
they're in second place right now in Ligue 1, which is a
crazy.
Big deal.
Who's in first?
Lens is in first.
What?
Alain Saint-Maximin just went back from Club America.
Oh.
Things didn't work out there. A little bit of Racismo going on out there.
Sure,
so he moves on.
Anytime a European player goes to Liga, it's just something. What happened with this dude?
Ramsey.
Aaron Ramsey. They
killed his dog.
They killed it or kidnapped his dog.
No, they killed it. He died in the dog pound.
I thought it was missing. No, it died.
Yeah, it died. I'm pretty sure it died. They killed the dog.
I mean, this is...
What's going on in Mexico, bro? whatever. But let's talk about PSG because I think Luis Enrique kind of needs this a little bit after having won Champions League last year and I think doing it in exceptional form. If you look at you know, sort of your top eight. It's littered with European, with English clubs, mm-hmm. right? The English clubs have done incredibly well. The only other team that, if you look at PSG last year, they had a run through most of those teams. They beat Arsenal. I believe they beat West Ham. I forget what other club PSG won last year. They are the standout when everyone says like, oh, the English clubs sort of control Champions League now because of the amount of money. PSG is the one team that can compete with them. But since last season, it hasn't been great this year. And not being in first, it's a lot like Real Madrid and Barcelona, right?
But how are they going to stop Florin Balogun, bro?
And that's the reason.
That's going to be the challenge.
I kind of wish the Pogba thing had worked out at Monaco because I'd love to see him balling during Champions
League. He's injured, right?
Yeah, it's a real shame. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just not, the situation there hasn't been great for
Pogba. So, I mean,
Balogun is the reason I'd watch Monaco, but PSG is going to win this pretty easily.
Yeah, but I'm going to watch this kind of with one focus in mind, like just to see, this is obviously a big two matches.
This is like watching your boy fight somebody who's a lot bigger. You're just like, yo, just get one punch. You know what I mean? Let me see one.
Just
good.
Make me proud.
Yo, I know you ain't gonna win, but let me see you. You know what I mean? I want Balogun to score a goal, and who cares if you lose 4-1? You know?
Is Mbappe's brother at Monaco? Where does Mbappe's brother play? I thought he was at Monaco. I'm wrong.
I have no idea.
Ethan Mbappe. Where does he play? I don't remember. But someone. So look it up. He's in Ligue 1 somewhere, but for some reason I thought it was
Lille.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I actually saw him play. I should have said that 2 weeks ago. I was like, oh yeah, Ethan Mbappe.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Next up, we were picking PSG there. And after that, let's move on to Dortmund versus Atalanta. Borussia Dortmund. I was leading into, I think it was maybe a few weeks into Champions League. I was like, this team is just very disappointing, mm-hmm. kind of always underachieving, especially underachieving in regards to even getting close to a potential Meisterschaft at in Bundesliga. And they actually kind of turned things around. Mm-hmm. Dortmund is like...
They're in
second place.
I mean, they're still far behind Bayern,
only 6 points.
Okay, that's actually not as bad as I thought. I know they just won 4-0 against Mainz.
Yeah.
At home. They seem to be clicking at the right time.
So, I just didn't expect this kind of turnaround because they just have an up and down season. And Champions League has been kind of okay for them as well. How much of a conversation? I mean, look, not to say that Atalanta are a bunch of scrubs, but...
Not at all. I just think they're a different club with not having Gasperini. So they qualify for Champions League because of how great Gasperini was as a manager. And now mm-hmm. him being at Roma, I think, kind of changes it. And I just don't have a lot of confidence in this Atalanta. Especially not going up against a club that's fully in form like Borussia Dortmund. So, I mean, they finished in 15th. You know, congratulations, right? You made it into this round. But I don't see... I really don't see them being able to best Dortmund.
Yeah, and then also selling Adamola Lookman.
Who's balling at Atletico.
He's doing fantastic at Atletico.
But that was a rough situation. Remember, he like waved off Gasperini and stuff? That was happy eventually. So,
we got Dortmund.
How about Galatasaray versus Juve?
I'm going to go with Juve.
Yeah.
Galatasaray lost. Who did they just get rid of? They sold Tammy Abraham?
Yes, they sold them to
Aston Villa. So they're going to look a little different going into this round 32. So, Juventus has looked pretty good these last few weeks. And obviously, we always talk about Weston McKennie mm-hmm. and how he's doing. But he's been fantastic. He signs a new deal.
But what a toxic up and down relationship this is. I swear to God, this is your boy and your girl. They're always calling you, texting you, I'm breaking up. And you never break up. So look at Weston McKennie's got, you know, 3 goals on the season. 4 successful dribbles.
Champions League.
Yes.
You in the Serie A, you would imagine he completed.
He's got a couple more. I think he's one of those players that he's so versatile that it's almost difficult to place him. But I think now, you know, you have a coach in Spalletti who thinks about, oh, I can really put him anywhere. In fact, recently he said he could be a great striker. He should be a center forward. Sure. So how many positions are you going to give Weston McKennie? So I'm just happy that he's on the pitch and he's balling.
Yeah. They had a tough loss. I was watching the game against Inter Milan. They had a tough loss. They got a red card. Weston McKennie got an assist in that game as well. But you would, again, lead to like high ambitions, I think, for Champions League and for Juve in Champions League. So I'm still optimistic about how far they're going to get. But yeah, Juve should get through Galatasaray. All right. Next up, we have Club Brugge against Atletico Madrid. Atletico are... Can we get the stats for Atletico up there? But this is the one game it might be tough, but Club Brugge always tends to surprise in Champions League. I mean, I think this round 32 doesn't have a lot of opportunities for that many upsets, but I think this could be one. I think Club Brugge can shock Atletico Madrid here.
I can see a world where that happened, but Atletico Madrid, you almost have to consider them a different team with their January signings. Adam Lookman in particular is absolutely balling. I mean, you've seen the shots from sideline of Simeone being like, I can't even believe this guy can do this, that we have a player on this team.
He tells his son, be like him.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. I mean, I got you on this team. You're not even a good player. And no, obviously, shouts to Simeone. I look at that and I think that this might be too much almost to prepare for. You know, the addition of so many new, so much more talent on this team. And just, you know, Adam Lookman presents a new ability to attack that they didn't have before. So I just, with him and, you know, Julian Alvarez together is just, to me, it's just so exciting. And I thought they're going to make pretty easy work of Club Brugge. But I do think Club Brugge really show up for this competition and are not going to make it easy.
No, see, and at home, they're obviously very strong. The it's one of the stats here. They have scored 21 goals at home in the last 5 home games.
Who?
Club Brugge.
Yeah. I mean, they're... Who do they play?
I mean, who do they play? But still, I mean, like, they seem to bring that kind of energy into Champions League, where especially at home, teams have a tough time. The last, 4 years, Club Brugge has been like, yo, who are these people?
Yeah.
And then, Club Brugge.
As Nico will always call it.
Yeah. Because we all saw in Brugge.
Yeah. You're trying. You're really thinking Club Brugge.
Yeah, so I'm
Brugge.
Like, look, there could be a little bit of okay here, but I think...
I'm not doing that. why don't we go Bodo Glimt versus Inter Milan, which, look, Bodo Glimt, right, they beat City, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. They have, similar to Club Brugge, they show up for these competitions sometimes. I just, against Inter, I don't see it.
Yeah, and it's in general, nobody really scores on Inter Milan that much. No. And I can't see them getting past them across two legs. It's a little too much. But too big of a mountain to climb.
We're both saying Inter on that one. Karabakh versus Newcastle. Dude, Newcastle aren't looking great this year. And I think the gap between lower level or mid-table, because they're, I believe, in 10th at the moment. Mm-hmm. They're your mid-table Premier League team and your champions of some of these smaller leagues, like where Karabakh comes from, I think that gap is still so big. But Karabakh are putting all their chips in this basket. They've won 3 out of their last 6 across all competitions. They're the top of the Premier Lucchese, Liquasi. I believe I'm pronouncing that 100% correctly.
To our Azerbaijani community.
I think I've offended multiple communities, to be quite honest with you, with my pronunciation. But Karabakh is one of those teams where you just don't expect how hard they go in this competition. And I do think they're going to catch Newcastle slipping. I mean, Eddie Howe is kind of in the middle of a little bit of a crisis at the moment where his job is in question. So could this put it over the top? I could see them losing.
In one game, maybe I give it to you. Across two, I don't know. They also got smacked 6-0 by Liverpool the other day.
Okay, but that's Liverpool. Liverpool and Newcastle, very different.
I mean, maybe it might be 3-0 for Newcastle.
You know what? I think Newcastle might probably win, but I could see Karabakh. Look, we were trying to find a couple upsets. For me, Karabakh is that.
Okay.
Do you have an upset for Olympiacos versus Bayer Leverkusen?
I mean, no, I do not think there will be.
Yeah, me neither,
maybe. There won't be any Germans upset here. No, Bayer Leverkusen should take this. Olympiacos. again, also has been decent. Who's the striker that I saw that they got a Brazilian guy that was decent.
Everybody needs one.
Yeah, yeah. Olympiacos has, what's his name? Oh, maybe he's not Brazilian. Oh, he's Moroccan.
Moroccan.
Looks Brazilian. If I looked at him, I'd be like, that's a Brazilian guy.
Oh, that made us all uncomfortable.
I mean, I look Brazilian too. Yeah, I look Moroccan as well.
You look Moroccan as well.
Al-Kabi, he looked pretty good in the last game I had seen him in Champions League against Ajax. I think Bayer Leverkusen is a little too strong here, and across both legs, they should do just fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Absolutely thrilled about our next guest, the one and only. I mean, this is someone
who's written a book. I don't even read. And this guy's written one. That's crazy. I didn't know you could do that. I thought they were just in the library already.
I thought computers spit them out.
That's crazy. I said, ChatGPT, write me a book. I don't want this guy to think he's better than me.
Okay. No, but man, this is an OG, someone who I think for us, as stand-up comedians who started, got into this space as people who why would soccer people welcome us? But this is a person who did welcome us. I think very early on when NYCFC started, my man, he is the radio host for NYCFC. He announcer as well, and also the host of Coaching Academy on Sirius XM. The one and only Glenn Crooks. Glenn, hey. What's up, man?
There you go. Look at this. I've got two more volumes. They're both going to be AI. Right, so I'm not writing. I'm not writing those. But
here's my suggestion. More photos. What are we doing here? There's not one recipe in here. What's going on? What kind of book is
this? Well, I'll tell you what. The cost of I discovered this. The cost of the book increases dramatically if you put pictures in there. So
is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Now we know that. So
okay. Well, good to know. Glenn, thank you.
Who knew Finding Waldo was so expensive? Yeah, where is he?
Glenn, now obviously you are a former coach, and you have a lot of history in soccer, and this is what the book is about. Put It On Frame, where it's soccer stories and strategies from top soccer coaches and experts, and I think that's where we should start, because you've spoken to a lot of coaches and a lot of people in the game, and Emma Hayes is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you met Emma Hayes kind of early in her coaching career. At what point did you realize that she's kind of like the genius we now know that she is?
Well, really not until she got back home and started coaching Chelsea. And she was at Iona College, and I was at Rutgers at the time, both coaching the women's game. Mm-hmm. And I also coached at PDA, a Jersey club.
And that's she was the Jersey club.
The Jersey club, people. Yeah.
Wait,
the Jersey
club. I don't mean to interrupt, but we hosted the ICC Futures, International Champions Cup Futures. Yeah. Right? And they, International Champions Cup, which we're doing friendlies for a long time.
PDA walked in and was like,
so they did a youth tournament in Bradenton, Florida. Yeah. We were the in-stadium host for that, and which is really cool. And we got to see like Ethan Mbappe play for PSG, right? Kylian Mbappe's younger brother. But in the girls' tournament, PDA was the team. They ended up losing in the final to Barcelona.
Yeah.
But throughout the entire tournament, everybody was like, PDA, PDA, PDA. And then we saw them play, and it was just like this almost like it harkened back to a time of like the way we think about like the what soccer, American soccer was. It was like there was a lot of physicality. It was just a lot of like they were overpowering a lot of teams. And then they ended up playing Barcelona, which was like, oh, this is like, they play like the Barcelona, and it was like a bit of a shock to them. But I just wanted to give the flowers to PDA. That, I mean, this is a historic team.
I'm strongly connected with PDA. I started almost from the beginning, but my assistant coach for years at Rutgers University, Michael O'Neill, is the director of coaching at PDA, and he's built this staff that has they're great people. So they know how to relate to their players and treat them, but also coaching the game. And they're all, they continue to educate themselves. And up until 2 years ago, I was coaching there as well. So I've been at PDA for a long time. So
and Emma Hayes is also coached at PDA?
No. She was at, but she was recruiting my players at PDA. Yeah, well, it's a kind of.
We're comedians. But anyway,
yeah.
I'm only kidding.
That wasn't so funny, though. Yeah, and then I met her on the recruiting trail a little bit. So we didn't know each other like that well, but we she remembered me when I saw her years later when she was at a Gotham game. And this was just a couple of months before she was hired for the U.S. Women.
Yeah.
And we had a great chat then. And then after winning the gold, I got a hold of U.S. Soccer. I said, I need to get her on, and I think she'll be willing. And that's what the first Q&A in the book is Emma, and she's interesting.
Yeah,
you know, you can. Yeah,
it's very rare that you find a coach that can be as intense as she is, and yet somehow be the kind of a good friend to the players. We see the relationship that she has with like a Trinity Rodman, like they're doing the dances together and whatnot. It's rare that you see that. I don't see that a lot in the game.
Did you ever dance with any of your players, Glenn?
I was going to say, what do you attribute that to? But yeah, I'm more interested in this now.
I did not dance with any of my players. So I'd like to
what a real shame.
Go on record as saying I didn't dance with any of my players.
We're going to have to teach you
in any venue at any moment.
Okay, good.
Her assistant, Denise Reddy, who you often see, mm-hmm. and she's kind of an unknown figure, but those two together are an important pair. Denise was an All-American at Rutgers. I've known Denise since the late 80s, so she's a very good friend of mine, and I just had her on my SiriusXM FC show. She was recently inducted into the New Jersey Youth Soccer Hall of Fame. Right. But in that interview, I said, what about Emma? What is it about Emma? And it's the leadership thing. But she said it's very rare that the players understand that the coach thinks of them more as people than players. And that comes across. Yet, she's a brilliant tactician. She's in the trenches, so she's doing the training along with Denise. So she really sees the game well, and as you'll if you read the interview I did with her, she's massively into AI. She's constantly studying the game. She's going to NFL coaches because of the specialization of the coaches and how does that all operate under management. So she's constantly evolving herself. Which and then the people underneath her respond to that.
What did you think? You mentioned the AI thing. We were joking about this obviously a couple months ago when Laura Harvey from the Seattle Reign,
right? She set up her team for an opponent based on AI.
Like what the tactics to apply.
Yeah.
When you heard that, did you think of like, oh, cool, somebody's trying something new? Or I mean, it was obviously very, very highly criticized.
Yeah, a lot of people got very upset, but I think you got to use everything that's available to you, right?
I don't understand why you would get upset. I think the initial thing everybody thinks is, oh, you're taking the easy way out. No, right. You're just adding another resource. There's a chapter in the book called The Specialists. Well, do you want a throwing coach or a set piece coach? Or do you want a substitutions coach? They're all featured in here. And to me, it's like take every aspect of the information that you can glean. And if it means 1 point in the standings and you get into the postseason, isn't it worth it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have no problem with it. And Laura will be on my show soon to talk about that. So I'll be sure to put that out and tag you guys.
Okay. You've been in the game for a long time. And this is a question that I always want to know from, like, your forward is by Tony Meola. I've had this conversation with Tony. It's a very different answer that I would give because Tony's an old school guy. Grew up in the same area that I did, essentially. But I would love to hear your thoughts. The game has shifted now where it's, like, less of the, like, omnipotent managers, right? Like Sir Alex Ferguson's and Arsene Wenger's, where everything from the font in the menu to the tactics on the pitch are handled by one person. And now it's all these committees, and we're seeing more head coaches in the game, and we're seeing more throw-in coaches and set-piece coaches. What are your thoughts on the game? Did you prefer it when it was the one person rules all, or do you like this more committee, more all hands on deck?
As long as there is a blend. So at the Coachella Invitational,
almost
I just
like
got back
Glenn
from...
Crooks.
Glenn Crooks, yeah. That's my new name.
You got a pen name if you want to. Feel free to use it.
I conducted 24 interviews in the last 9 days out in Indio, California, including the head coaches of each team that was there. And that includes Yoan Dame, who's the new St. Louis City coach. He worked under Wilfred Nancy. That includes Rafael Vicky, who's back at MLS. He was with the Chicago Fire, came from Switzerland. That includes Mark Dos Santos, Pascal Janssen, our guy. But what I mentioned Dame at first because he's that young breed. He doesn't have a playing background at all. So he's using a lot of data plus the information from those that are around him in formulating how he wants to go about it. But there's a very defined way. And Roman Berkey, their goalkeeper, here's what he told me. He goes, it's so different because they were a high press counterattack. You know, the style was completely Bradley Carnell started.
Bradley Carnell go.
So Roman Berkey said, yeah, we're adjusting because whenever you're on the ball, you have to have three options. There's a requirement of three options. So players are moving off the ball. So when I watch them play, but I don't know if this directly answers your question, but there's that younger breed. The younger breed of coaches are less the players and more the guys that have studied the game, you know, almost in an academic way.
Right. Do you like that? I mean, that's what I'm getting at. Are you an old head?
No, but that's the blend I want. I mean, when I coached at Rutgers, I was told I was the only Division I coach, men or women, who did not play either collegiately or professionally. The only one.
Wow.
And I did okay. Mm-hmm. But it forced me to study the game more. Now, I'm not out doing, you know, demonstrations. I have my assistants doing that because, you know, soccer, I wasn't introduced to soccer until I was about 14 years old. It was just partly my age and partly the fact of the town I grew up in. There was no soccer.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't born with it. So my skills and my development as a player were really almost non-existent. But I always enjoyed the tactics of sports. And soccer, you know, really, I dug into it because I love the global aspect of it, the supporters, the atmosphere, all that. That's what really turned me on about it. And then I got involved. But I studied the game from that. So I think that the one thing about a player walking in and thinking they can just get it done, you know, a former great player, that's rarely going to happen. But but you see, even a Frank Lampard, you know, he went out and got all his badges. He has a UEFA Pro, you know, it's not like he just walked in and,
so, do the work.
So that's the blend, I think, that could be most effective. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when, especially I'm listening to you do a broadcast and there is a certain, we always sort of compare announcers, right? Everybody has like their favorite and everybody has like a certain style. Right? But when I'm listening to Glenn Crooks, there's a real, and maybe it's because I'm also an NYCFC fan. There's like a, you know, my dad's holding my hand, guiding me through this game. And like, there's a certain sense of like not talking down to the audience. And I would imagine maybe this is similar to your coaching style. I want to get to like NYCFC and sort of the future of what the team sort of looks like. But I want to give like maybe to our audience, like who may not know you, the Glenn Crooks bona fides, because every single time people mention your name, I'm like, oh, Glenn Crooks, he coached Carly Lloyd, right? That's like the first thing that comes to
mind. That's my claim to fame.
That's how I first knew you. But I want to make sure, like, are there any maybe other players that have come through the Glenn Crooks, coaching tree or whatever? Like, what is the if you are telling people about your history in the game? How would you say that? What's the elevator pitch for Glenn Crooks?
Well, I think of myself as a coach, but I've had a fairly unique journey because, again, the lack of a playing background. I went to the University of Georgia to study communications and journalism because I wanted to be the play-by-play announcer for the New York Yankees. I was, you know, massive baseball and massive Yankees fan. So my idea was I wanted to get on the radio, and I did. And I was full time at a small station in New Jersey, WMTR, WDHA. Not sure if you're familiar with them, but I was a sports director.
Two different at the same time?
Well, it's AM and FM.
I didn't know that.
They used to have those configurations a little bit more frequently. Yeah. That's newspapers and radio have. There's been a demise. It's very. I really get so disappointed when I think about that.
Yeah.
Because I wake up in the morning. morning, bagel, coffee, and a newspaper, you know?
You know, it's funny you say that. I was on the subway, and I remember my first year in, like, corporate America. The subway used to be filled with, there was a certain way you would have to fold a newspaper to sit on the subway.
Yeah, so
and
you didn't go into the person. Yeah.
And you had to remember the way you fought. And I used to know how to do that because my first year, I was like, I'm going to be like these guys. And I would get, my hands would have the ink all over them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just remember, like, I kind of got the news without having to wait for the next subway station to get to connect. And, you know, your cell phone reception goes out as you're in the tunnel. And I was like, man, it was just an easier time. I
delivered
that.
The Newark News as a young boy.
I'm from born and raised in Newark. You know that,
Newark.
Right?
That's when the paper came out in the afternoon. I don't know if you remember that. You might not be old enough for that. There was no morning edition. Pardon?
They used to talk about it on sitcoms. Oh, okay. Like, repeats. They'd be like, oh, get the afternoon paper.
Yeah. that's what yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. And then it came out in the morning. And then it became the Star Ledger. And then it became NewJersey.com. And you read all your news online, and which is kind of what it's become. Yeah,
sure,
so
sure.
It's tough having the bagel, coffee, and the computer open. I do it, but you know.
I almost had an article written about me in the Star Ledger, and not for a good thing. But it was that luckily was removed.
I had one, and it was a great friend of mine who will be in volume two, TJ Kostecki. He talked to me about vision training, he called it, still does it. And the story in the Star Ledger, because I wanted to promote it, was how my team at LIU Brooklyn, this is the way I got the Rutgers job, we won the NEC championship and got into the NCAA tournament in our third year there. And did you ever go to a game in the cage in LIU Brooklyn?
I played there.
On the Cove. Yeah.
Oh, I played there.
Oh my gosh. You know, it was 60 yards wide. And then 2 yards further was a fence with concrete embedments to keep everything.
That was originally where NYCFC was going to play. I'm kidding.
No. Well, it was definite home field advantage.
It's like tiny and it's diagonal.
It's no longer there.
No, yeah.
Because the current president of the university disbanded. Like, it's a really sad day a couple of years ago when the LIU Brooklyn men's team, which had massive tradition, Joe Macnick, Arnie Ramirez, and TJ Kostecki, my friend, ended up coaching there before they disbanded. And then the women's program I started, and that's gone too. Anyway, but the vision training that I learned, it led to a championship based on how the final goal was scored. And they wrote it up in the Star Ledger.
So that's really cool. Lovely. Yeah. Okay. Any other, we always mention Carly Lloyd. Any other players that come to mind of like that you had the pleasure of coaching?
Well, the next that comes to mind is Janelle Foligno, who is a Canadian national team player. Okay. And she won.
We don't care about them, Glenn. No, I'm only kidding.
But that was
shouts to Canada.
That was the where they actually got were starting to become more prominent. And she scored a goal in the Olympics, and they won a medal. They won a bronze, which for them at the time was very, very important. And one of the people that helped get Janelle to the program was Karina LeBlanc. Now, Karina did not play for me, but she was an assistant for 4 years, but was playing as a goalkeeper for the Canadian national team at the time. And she's risen in prominence, and she's in the book.
Yeah.
One of the great leaders. I what an assistant coach, because of how the players looked up to her. And it was, and we've remained great friends. And, I had a great coaching staff. Michael O'Neill, one of the top coaches in the country. He ran a lot of the training sessions because that was his strength. And then Karina with the goalkeepers. And we had some fantastic years. And and other players of that prominence, probably not youth national team players. I've coached a lot of players that have gone on to coach. And I didn't coach Denise Reddy. That was before I took the Rutgers job. So those are the people that come to mind right away.
Amazing.
There's other pros out there and that played overseas and things, but you're putting me on the spot.
No, it's all good.
Go through your Rolodex. I guess when you think about the women's game and someone like you, we talk about you coached Carly Lloyd at a young age. So that kind of can place people where sort of what generation you're a part of. The game has changed so much, right? We were talking about Trinity Rodman before. She's now getting paid roughly $2 million a year to be an NWSL. That's very different from the world you were coaching in women's soccer. Talk about how different it is now. And did you think it would get to this point?
I didn't necessarily think it would get to this point because there was no There was no outlet at first. So I'm at Rutgers coaching good players. Now a lot of players that go through Rutgers University because the program has maintained its excellence and maybe even a little bit more with a couple of Final Fours since I departed. So maybe that was a good move for the for the university. Is that there are more outlets. There are more professional outlets, not just in you know domestically, but worldwide for players to choose from. But at that time, no, I didn't really necessarily see it. And the iterations early on, it was a bit of a struggle, some ownership issues. So I can't honestly say that I saw that coming. But I'm so happy it has. And now we have two top-tier leagues in the United States, which I think is fantastic, with this USL Super League. Yeah. And they're competing with the NWSL. They make no bones about it. I thought at first it was going to be, you know, they would just consider themselves as the groundwork and the mm-hmm. stepping stone to the NWSL. But they're not approaching it like that at all.
Which you got to love, right? Competition yeah. makes everyone a little bit better.
Yeah, you would think. The Trinity Rodman thing, it's going to generate some really interesting possibilities. Sam Kerr comes to mind. Now, Sam Kerr, this is interesting because I forget what they call it. Like you have to fit a profile.
A high impact player.
Hip.
A yeah. hip. Okay. Yeah. So apparently at this very moment, Sam Kerr.
Yeah.
Best forward in the world, probably, but she's had some injury problems and hasn't played recently. But she's back playing. She played for Chelsea yesterday. Mm-hmm. And she is not considered hip. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe she might be.
You're using it correctly.
Yeah.
Because
it's a terrible acronym.
So there are some breakdowns in the different ways that they're determining this. If Sam Kerr doesn't fit it, because she's been injured for a while. Are you kidding me? Because there are going to be teams that would like to bring Sam Kerr in. Because they will be willing to put out the whatever the price tag is.
Yeah. Okay.
And she deserves it.
Without a doubt.
With that in mind, I would like to say I spent time with Nick Cushing out in California because he's now coaching the Denver Summit of the NWSL expansion team. So I went to his hotel and we sat for an hour and talked a lot. He's got a good situation, right? Like Lindsay Heaps
coming back. Yeah, coming
for
back
instance,
home.
Jeez. Just signed the French national team keeper. It was like the day I met with him. He was very excited. They had just signed the French national team goalkeeper. And he's got a really solid back line. I mean, they've really done it right. He's got an impressive staff. The owner is a local guy, and he's putting a lot of money into it. So should be. So Nick seems very happy.
He won with Manchester City Women.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Six trophies.
All right. Oof. All right, let's get to some NYCFC conversations because this is obviously a huge part of all of our lives, and you've been covering the team for over a decade.
We've all been there since the first kick.
Yeah,
we've all
true.
Been there.
Yeah,
were
true.
You guys in Orlando for the first game?
No. We went to Smithfield for the watch party.
Oh, okay.
Smithfield Hall. Remember that place?
Yeah.
Pay your rent, guys. It would have been nice to have you these days.
The last time you were on our podcast was, I believe, in 2017 or 2018. And a lot has changed since. Obviously, the first, I think...
We're getting a stadium.
And I think we were probably talking about that back then.
I think none of us believed it would happen back then.
We were talking about that in, honestly, 2015.
Yeah.
Because some of the muckety-mucks had already said, things are in progress.
They said 5 years. Remember that? Yeah, we'll have a stadium in 5 years.
anyway.
And now it's actually happening. Did you do the stadium tour, the same site tour?
Yes.
Yeah, I've done it, right?
I love the field that they lined out the field, but with the rocks in the middle. And
but
you could see the field, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, a cool touch.
So, I mean, it's obviously, emotional for us as well to getting to see that. But for someone who, obviously we've been season ticket holders and since we've been doing this podcast, I've interviewed several of the players, but you talk to the players and staff and coaching staff almost every day, probably, right? I mean, it's every week you're speaking to the coaches and
or thinking about them. I mean, they're talking to them or thinking about them.
You accidentally
texting them. What are you up to?
Yeah, yeah. How you doing? How you doing?
Accidentally call your wife Pascal. Yeah. I mean, whoopsie. Yeah. But when it comes to the stadium, I mean, just sort of where we kind of are right now. I mean, what does that elicit? What emotions that elicit in you that there is a stadium coming? And even from when we spoke to now, like the stadium, winning MLS Cup, sort of how do you sort of factor all of those things?
Well, I'm very sincere when I say this. I'm most happy for the supporters. And the first thing I think of as the lead commentator is I no longer will have to do games from Citi Field or Yankee Stadium where I can't see the far side of the pitch.
Yeah.
Our broadcast position is for baseball. The fields are set up for soccer. And the far corner flag, when Maxi Morales, Augustin Ojeda, Fernandez Mercado, when they're all like over there, I can't... But I have the binoculars.
Yeah.
At Citi Field, they have that screen that's bigger than, you know, Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm looking up at that sometimes. And we have the monitors also.
Sure,
but
sure.
I like to just watch the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do that at Citi Field and Yankee Stadium for 90 minutes because of the sightline. So I'm very much excited about the fact that when we go on the road, the sightlines are beautiful at all the stadiums,
sure,
with rare exceptions. So I'm really
They were building the stadium, did they reach out to you about what would be best for the announcing
crew?
Well,
what we did, we sent some things to Sam Cook. So other news stadiums like TQL, St. Louis, Columbus.
Yeah.
So we would take pictures of things we thought should be the way. Would consider. And one of the things is, and this is like small, you wouldn't think of it, but when you come in to do a broadcast and you have a table and you're looking out, if the table doesn't have an area where you can take the wires from below and then pull them up and then plug in that way, there are some places we go to where all the wires are like on top of the desk because they don't have just a little
going
thing.
Through the table.
Just like the hole to access.
Yeah, like the hole. It's a gap, you know, between the window and the table. Just so those are the things that we. And then St. Louis City has this big pole where you have to actually go like this.
Oh my God.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't put a goddamn pole there. Yeah.
Philly is like that too in their press box. It's like bars.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just
Philadelphia,
like,
is a rough broadcast. We're normally outside when we're at Philadelphia.
That's the last time I saw you. Yeah, there's like a gap between the two like building the portions, and that's where they stick the
ring. Yeah,
so you're like in a jacket.
Yeah.
You're like in a winter parka.
Well, the first game this year is in no tell what the weather will be on March 1st. So we'll see. You know,
Are you excited about the schedule change coming up as someone who announces the games? I guess we think about the players, we think about the fans, we don't think about the radio guys or the lead commentators. What do you think about the schedule change? And do you think it's going to be good for the league to compete with the NFLs and the NBAs?
I like the schedule change. I don't like it for Minnesota. I don't like it for Toronto. I don't like it for Montreal. I think those three in particular are. And if you, I hung out with some of the Minnesota gang, and they didn't vote. Thumbs up for this.
Right.
They were thumbs down because of their situation. But now they say, look, we want to be a team player, but it really puts them at a disadvantage. That's the side of it that's I find difficult, because they're going to end up playing, their first five games on the road, and then, they're going to have this mixed up schedule, which I think from a sporting standpoint, and and that's the coach in me, I look at everything through a sporting lens. Like New York City FC playing at Red Bull Arena versus Yankee Stadium. I prefer the game at Red Bull Arena on a regulation field that, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Where the grass is always good and you can play the style that New York City wants to play. That's just a for instance. Talking to Brad Sims about New York City 2 and this new stadium that's coming, Etihad Park. And his first, he looked right at me and he goes, they won't be playing their games there. And it's not a financially solvent thing to do. And that's what Brad Sims is in the business of doing, making money, making good financial decisions. From the sporting standpoint, this was in an interview. I said, man, I don't care about that. I care about the sporting side. Sure. You've got these players who you're hoping will one day play for your first team. Why can't they experience that? So if they are involved in a postseason thing, or if the two team is in U.S. Open Cup, which sounds like that's not happening anymore, but then they would open the stadium. But otherwise, they won't play their regular games. But that's just a for instance. Me. I'm not saying Brad Sims made the wrong decision.
No,
saying that's just me.
As a coach, your coach brain is like, I want the best environment for
my
players.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think, the the idea that this season, I like this season because you actually get the new calendar, because you actually get kind of, as a coach, you get a kind of a second preseason, you know, in between.
Sure.
You know, and this Coachella event I was at, supposedly they're gonna hold it in between, you know, that period of time where they'll have.
Oh, nice.
What about 6 weeks off?
Like an apertura and clausura.
Absolutely. So I'm fond of it.
Yeah, and when it comes
to... And that MLS Cup, if it happens to be played in Toronto, it won't be 10 below wind chill.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. Those are brutal.
So given that you've covered the team for so long, and you speak to the head coach, Pascal Janssen, last season, I didn't really have super high expectations, given to new coach...
Yeah.
Well, you know, whatever he can do
from Europe, from, you know, what does he know?
A while, yeah.
So is that what can you say, given that you've spoken to the head coach, Pascal Janssen, quite a bit? I mean, there from what I can say is, and then, you know, it's hard to not compare the previous coach to the current one. But even when you look at press conferences, the one thing I noticed, there's a certain level of accountability that I think he puts on the players, but then also there's a little protectiveness as well. There isn't, mm-hmm. And just to compare, like Cushing, I found to be extremely protective of just like, you know, it's all just me. And sometimes people don't exactly want that. I think even just a few nuggets of like, hey, I spoke to this player and I didn't like the decision that he made or whatever. But even that, I think it's warmed people to Pascal Janssen.
Well, I would encourage everybody to go on my social media, and I just spoke to Pascal for 35 minutes at Coachella. It's my first long form interview with him since he was hired, and I do speak to him every week, and I'm very fond of him, both personally and as a coach. I think he's brilliant. And I have written this publicly. I don't think he's long for MLS. That doesn't mean he's leaving next year. I'm just saying he has aspirations for the Premier League. He's 53 years old now. He just recently celebrated a birthday. But I watch this team, how they make in-game adjustments. And that's, you know, I always say this. I said this to several other coaches that I met with at Coachella talking about Pascal, is that that's the sign of a great coach to me, that their team on their own can make adjustments that are necessary in a game when maybe things change a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons that they had success last year. And he's also a Dutch guy with a sense of humor. There aren't a whole lot of those.
No, that's rare.
There aren't a whole lot of those.
Yeah.
So that favors him as well. But that was a great description, Christian, as far as, you know, kind of the accountability, but also the arm around the player. Mm-hmm. But if there's a mistake made, I mean, he was very open about the Thiago Martins, Matt Freeze situation in Atlanta last year, that Martins was in the wrong. That's his captain.
Yeah.
And he publicly, he never said Martins' name, but you didn't have to, you know, read too far between the lines to understand who he was talking about. Matt Freeze, in the last preseason match against San Jose, rolled a ball out to this kid, Kevin Pierre, you know, one of their younger players, and it right in front of the goal with pressure, and it was not a wise decision. And just in talking to Pascal after the game, he was just like, yeah, the better decision probably would have been just to launch the ball long there because of the what was going on around. So the team and Matt Freeze, who we feel is the number one for the U.S. men, they just continue to develop. And that's, he's never 100% satisfied. He goes, that was okay. You know, after coming from behind to beat Orlando 2-1 with Alonso Martinez scoring the game-winning goal in stoppage time. One of the great moments, by the way, in all the broadcasts I've done because of the eruption of the bench.
Yeah.
But as the bench everybody, there were hugs. Pascal, he was looking out onto the field. He was pointing here. No emotion.
Speaking of, you get to talk to Pascal Janssen way more than we have. Great guy from the conversations we've had with him. But there's one thing about that we haven't been able to ask. You speak about how his team can adjust. He doesn't. He wears the exact same thing every time he's on the pitch side. It's 105 degree day. He's in a sweat track suit. What's going on with that, Glenn?
He won't bite on that. He will not bite.
He won't answer it.
Well, first I said, are you superstitious? Because it was during a run of games where it was going well and he was wearing the same thing. He goes, no, I'm not superstitious at all. So why, you know, it was almost like, well, what's going on? And it's like, he doesn't say next question, but that's pretty much what he was inferring. Next question.
He refuses to talk about this.
He called you fake news, Glenn. The fake news media.
And he knows what the fake news thing is. Like, he's very up to speed on what's going on politically. Let me tell you. Yeah,
he's a good dude in that sense.
Incredible.
And I'm impressed. It's 105 degrees and you're in a sweat tracksuit.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I don't even see a bead of sweat. You're Dutch.
No, he does not sweat.
Yeah. You're Dutch. You're supposed to be cold. You're supposed to be high in this weather.
So I want to just get back to the book real quick, because when I was reading it, the first thing that comes to mind for me is Grant Wall's Masters of Modern Soccer, which is a sort of
great book.
A similar kind of task of like speaking to coaches and just different people in the game. But this is clearly a coach talking to other coaches, right? And that's Grant's book was obviously a journalist speaking to coaches about the game. But when it comes to having these conversations, like, as I mean, for us as comics, when we are around other comedians and we get to talk shop and we get to, we become, I think, our true sort of selves, the people we were meant to be. When you get to do that with other coaches from every aspect of the game at every level, what is it the same kind of thing?
It is. And I wish I was still coaching, because I've learned so much through over 1,200 interviews. And the reason I put soccer coaches and experts is because a guy like Grant Wall is somebody I brought on and interviewed. Because when I read his book, and the reason I brought him on, and I said it during the interview, is that every coach should read this book. It really was a coach's manual, because he was talking to Pulisic and they were going over video clips of Pulisic. What a wonderful thing. But Grant Wall will be in volume two, my interview with him, and sort of honoring him.
Of course.
I'll have a special World Cup chapter leading into the Men's World Cup this summer. And I sat next to Grant for the three games in the group stages that the U.S. played, because we were both freelance. And I was gone after the group stage in Qatar. And then, you know, tragedy struck. And so that'll be my way of honoring him in the next volume.
I love it.
Yeah,
thank you.
He was very influential in our career.
Yeah,
so.
What an honor. For lots of people.
Many of us.
Yeah.
He was the only guy writing soccer. I mean, for Sports Illustrated Soccer, are you kidding?
Yeah. For us, I think it was different. I remember, you know, you think a guy like that's going to hate two comedians coming in here doing yuck yucks. And he couldn't have been a bigger fan. He couldn't have been more complimentary, and he couldn't be a bigger supporter of ours. And I was shocked. I'm like, this guy's going to hate us.
I think we there's a lot of that. We in our minds of like, oh, soccer people are going to hate that we're like these like clowns sort of in this space.
And the ones that do hate us are the last that you'd expect.
And I think what I realized is like, it's weirder when we meet like, especially people with that have been working in soccer a very long time. When we meet them and they don't like us, I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird. Like, why we're not gonna take anything that you've have
we're not competing.
And you're comedians, sense of humor.
You feel like that'd be good for the sport. Well, also you know, you're someone who spent a lot of time in this business, and you could have very easily looked at us like, who the hell is
you know this? What I remember, I hope this was you. Did you send me something about had a scarf or something that you were trying to make and sell early on?
Yeah.
Well, that was you,
was
right?
That us?
Somebody contacted me. Yeah. And I remember like putting it out there like on Twitter or something, but I hadn't met you guys. I didn't even know. I just said, I'll help you.
Oh, no, I don't think that was us. We did make a scarf, though.
No, that was definitely you.
Okay.
We would have given it to you.
You didn't give me anything, but I'm...
that changes today, because we have a lot of...
we have a couple extras.
I don't know if that... Right. Who knows?
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Glenn.
It's all right.
Put It on Frame, Stories and Strategies from Top Soccer Coaches and Experts by Glenn Crooks. Go pick it
up. Volume 1 of 3.
That's right.
So check
the trilogy. He's going to be
this is better than Star Wars.
This is better than this is the new Tolkien.
Yeah.
Right? So be on the lookout. Glenn Crooks, seriously, always an honor to sit down and have a conversation with you. Yeah, you not only are you just an incredible mind when it comes to the game, but you're an incredibly kind person and so welcoming to us. And it genuinely means a lot. So thank you so much for joining us.
Christian, Alexis, I'm very happy to be here. And I thank you for inviting me. Really, it's been a pleasure.
All right.
Of course.
The Brazilian national team has finished fifth in World Cup qualifying, their worst ever position into the tournament. And here is Carlo Ancelotti at Carnaval. Mm. Is this a good look for the Brazilian manager?
You know what? I think a lot of people are going to make a lot about it because it's like, oh, how dare you? You know, we are not in a great place heading into the World Cup, and you can't just be seeing the optics are bad of you partying. But this is what makes Carlo Ancelotti great.
He's not necessarily partying. He's just...
That's what he looks like when he's having a good time.
He's just, you know, observing, okay? He's tactically trying to understand all the samba ladies and the dancing. You know,
the dancing would be better if you were in a 5-5-3-2.
Okay. He's analyzing.
Or maybe he's
the
just waiting for the boom cha cha boom cha cha, because that's really when he gets out there and really shows. He got the shoulder moves and everything. I think there's video of him like Ronaldo, like R9, calling him up to the flow.
Yeah.
And you know they're having a good time. Like for me, I'm like maybe this is what Brazil needs, because Brazil isn't, you know, it's not England. You know, they're not like, hey, we got to get stuck in.
Sure.
Brazil needs jogar bonito, and part of that is watching a couple ladies throw ass. You know what I mean? That's part of it.
More than anything, I don't think he's doing even anything slightly wrong. I mean, for the manager of the national team to be at a big event like this seems fairly normal, and a World
Cup
year.
This is like when Pep did Oktoberfest. You got to drink. You got to get in there with the boys. You know?
So he's there to have a good time in the only way he knows how necessarily, right? But the fact that he's just like a chill dude.
Like if he was the manager of the U.S. men's national team, I'd say get out there, get involved in a school shooting. You know, do something.
Is that what you would say? Is that what you would say, Alexis?
Maybe we bleep that out. I'm just saying America has some problems.
Sure. I mean, I wish we could export anything else, but it seems to be that this is the only thing. But this doesn't seem like much of a big deal. The one thing that was kind
of... Get in the Epstein files. There's something American.
The one thing that was kind of... the funniest thing out of the whole thing was the thing that was not real, which was the AI image that a lot of publications reported it. It was real.
Can I say? We all thought it was real. That's how cool Carlo Ancelotti is. We think, he's in Brazil making out with three girls.
We're not going to show it. We're not going to show it.
But why not?
There's an image of Carlo kissing three women, like all at the same time.
They're kissing him.
Three women are kissing him. Yeah,
he's just like,
Carlo.
I just walked in here. I don't know if you know this, but they call me Don Carlo for a reason. And by the way, we all 100% believed it without even wanting to. In fact, I think it was a little disappointing when I found out it wasn't real.
Yeah, because you wish something like that would be real. But I'm like, even Carlo ain't that messy. You know what I mean? Like he can be a little bit eccentric, but not, I don't think, to that degree. I heard
his wife is cool, but I don't think she that cool.
But they were reporting it in articles being like, he attended, they're using the image title, and it's like, he attended the
kissing booth, apparently.
He attended Carnival with his wife, and it's like,
which one of those three is his lady?
You want to check your sources a little bit? Yeah. Like, if he did attend with his wife, you think he's going to be taking a photo this?
Remember, like, a year ago, there was a photo of him at, like, some cowboy bar in Montana, and we're all like, how is that possible? And it's like, yeah, Carlo Ancelotti loves Montana. And we're like, of course he does. He's an eccentric guy in this way. He's just he's living life. He's letting the wind push his sails wherever it may go. So if you see here him, all of a sudden Ronaldo sees him, how many managers do you think a player would be like, yo, you need to get up here and party with us? Mm. Not many. Don Carlo's that guy. Exactly. R9 sees him. He thinks party would be better with manager, with the gaffer.
Nah, the dude is a legend. So good for him. Enjoy it. But what's going to happen is if you have a bad World Cup,
they're going to talk about this forever.
They're going to be like, this is the reason why.
You should have been kissing four women at the same time.
All right, let's get to some rapido reactions. We have 90 seconds to give our thoughts on each particular topic. Producer Carter will be giving us
the
subjects.
Couldn't get to otherwise. Let's, Carter, what you got for us?
All right, eager tutor to Tottenham. You guys said it's going to be hard to bring someone in. They brought someone in. Do you like the appointment?
The Croatian Sam Allardyce.
I love it. Even the way he introduced that topic.
Oh, the tone of it was very condescending. But oh, you guys said, if you can't tell, our producer is a massive Tottenham fan.
But I don't even get any sense of excitement or that much even
this
optimism.
This is a save the season where, I think the optics of this are bad in the sense that it's kind of admitting you're in a relegation battle where if you're Tottenham, you shouldn't have to be. But bringing in Igor Tudor is... It's like, oh, was Thomas Frank your homeboy? Well, here comes a parole officer. You know what I mean? He's a very tough guy. He's a get to training early. He's everybody trained super hard.
Yeah.
He's going to whip these guys into shape. I don't know if it's going to be enough to get them into like any significant position, but they're going to whip him into shape. And I don't know if he stays as manager after the season.
There was a comment.
He's only there for 4 months. He had signed a four-month contract.
Okay. I don't know.
We don't have the comment. I saw it just before we started recording, but there's a comment from, anonymously from one of the players that said that the reason they didn't like Thomas Frank was that he constantly brought up how good Arsenal were.
Oh, I did hear about this. Yeah.
He's just like during after matches against Arsenal, he just kept highlighting how
not
good
even
they
matches
were.
After.
In general, he just like loved how they played maybe wanted to mimic it, but brought it up as a Tottenham manager holding the Arsenal cup and the whole thing. You can't be talking about it.
So. But it's going to be hard to find someone who doesn't think Arsenal is better than Tottenham. You know what I mean? What else you got for us?
Carter, what do you think?
All right. Raheem Sterling, no comment. Raheem Sterling joins Feyenoord. Very weird signing here, but what are you guys' thoughts on Raheem Sterling finally getting some playing time?
Not that weird of a signing, honestly. He's a good player. Is he at the level that he was when he was at City or Chelsea or early on in his Chelsea career? Probably not. You know, Liverpool even. Probably not. But, you know, is he good enough for the Eredivisie? Yeah, absolutely.
Did he play in the Club World Cup? I don't remember if we saw him play.
I don't recall. I
don't think he was. I could be wrong. I don't remember him playing. But look, for him just to get out of the situation that he's in, where it's disappointing when a player who I think has done a good service to the Premier League and to several different clubs, and to be like cast aside and just like kind of disrespected in a way. I mean, he's never come off as a person that had some sort of personality issue. Understanding,
I don't think so.
He's vilified in the media and stuff like that.
It's not his fault, but the media in England did a great job of trying to make him out to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
Especially with like the tattoo on his leg and buying a home as if that's a bad thing. Or when he was only wearing H&M clothes, they're like, how dare he be so cheap? Mm-hmm. When a white guy does it, it's the best in the world. So, I mean, we've all have problems with the English media, and I think that's one of them. This is a good example of a player, but his time at Arsenal I think scared a lot of people. He found it very difficult to get on the pitch, and when he did, he certainly didn't impress. But I think the Eredivisie is technically a step down. I think it's a good level for him to show he still got it.
He should be fine. Well, we shall see.
Come to MLS.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. All right,
New Jersey's favorite dad finally lost his first game at
Tony Soprano lost the game?
in La
even,
Liga.
Even in The Sopranos, they wouldn't call him his favorite dad.
You better call him your favorite dad.
Pellegrino Matarazzo finally loses to Real Madrid with Real Sociedad. Can he overcome this hump, or what? How are you guys?
No,
thoughts?
He cannot. He is a failure. Get him out of my league.
Yes, Zach. Look, it was a 4-1 loss to Real Madrid.
Was gonna come. The streak was gonna fall apart at some point. But what he got,
even Tony took an L in one of those episodes.
How many games won in a row?
I'm looking it up right now.
Was it unbeaten? I think it was 7 or 8.
His first match was which one against
Atletico Madrid.
So then which was a draw. So 9 unbeaten, or this was the ninth? This was the ninth game.
No, 9 in a row without losing, and then he loses the 10th match.
Sure.
Real Madrid. Still a great start for his career, and he got them as high as 8th, but they're really not that far. They're 10 points away from a European position. Oh, not true. 4 points away from 6th.
They were in 17th, I think, when he got there. So
they're 6 points away from 4 points away from 6th place. So there's a chance. I mean, they're better today than they were before they hired him. So yeah, do you lose to Real Madrid? Well, congratulations. So does everyone else in La Liga.
Right.
So and I think that actually got Real Madrid in the first place. So a big win for them as well. At the end of the day, I think you got to walk around. You got to say Pellegrino Matarazzo has done an incredible job. And right now, it was probably the best American coach that I can find. Okay. All right.
Is there a better one?
I mean, Greg Berhalter exists.
Yeah. Wow. Thank God that came after the bell.
All right. All right. Last one today. Antoine Semenya was on Snack Wars, and he had an interesting pizza take that I want Alexis to react to.
Yeah, I'll let you lead the way.
This is horrific. So the battle is English food versus the world.
Okay.
What part of the
world?
Which
is right there. I mean, this is, we don't need this competition.
But yeah, but first of all, we know.
The world wins. Yeah,
we know. We know. Bring your best, England. And maybe there's a chance you score one goal here. Look, I don't even crap on English food. Like, I understand English food, but the battle is fish and chips. Okay. By the way, Portuguese food. But you bring in fish and chips. This probably is one of your big swingers. Mm-hmm. Against the Domino's pizza. So what part of the world? Don't say this is America. And worse than that is apparently Antoine Semenya, a player we think is incredible. We've seen him live.
Of course.
So skilled. Apparently he thinks, and do we have a quote? It's criminal if you don't have barbecue sauce as the base to your pizza. So no tomato sauce, barbecue sauce.
Which I've never heard of this. I understand.
You know why? Because it would never be done. Who does this?
Barbecue is too, I don't know, tangy, too sweet.
It's just overwhelming.
It's
for an
just
entire.
A lot.
By the way, there's also pepperoni on it, which okay, some of that fat and maybe a little bit of that spice cuts through the barbecue sauce. He's like, yeah, this is the best pizza there is. He even said, before he opened it, he was like, yo, I won't eat this unless it's barbecue.
He didn't even want to look at it.
I don't even want to see it.
I need to be promised in writing that this is a barbecue based
pizza. Don't make me look at it, but tomato sauce. And the look on our producer's face when we played the video earlier, and he goes, I don't like, or I don't eat pizza with a tomato. What do you mean you don't? You mean pizza? What are you talking about?
The only way it's been made for a century?
This is the same island that calls a chicken sandwich a chicken burger because of the bun. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. Because what happens if I put cheese on that bun by itself? You're not going to have to call that a cheeseburger. Do you understand why you get everything wrong when it comes to food?
Antoine Semenya, we're going to have to take a couple flowers away that we've given you.
I'm going to say that you can't ever play in MLS because we're not going to allow it.
We're
not
going to allow it.
We don't want you sullying our pizza. And by the way, Domino's brother, the only place where you get barbecue sauce is a base.
I didn't know they invented that.
That's disgusting. And I love barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I just say they don't belong together.
No. Okay. Dude, what are you going to put french fries on the pizza? You just don't know what you're doing out there.
All right.
It's a lawless island.
That's another Rapido reaction. Shout out to producer Carter for giving those, tossing those our way. All right. Everybody, thank you again. Also, shout out to Glenn Crooks for joining us. Thank you so much. We always appreciate it. Glenn Crooks, go pick up his book.
Don't buy it. Just pick it up.
Yes. Go get Glenn's book. It is right here. Put it on frame. Stories and strategies from top soccer coaches and experts by Glenn Crooks. Yeah, it's available on Amazon and a bunch of other places. So go check it out if you want to read about. There's so many. Obviously, Emma Hayes. Mm-hmm. A lot of different coaches. Juan Carlos Amaros is in there. Who else do I remember?
You said Emma Hayes, Juan Carlos Amaros. Obviously, Grant Wall, the homie.
Anton Dorrance, who was national team coach. Coach for the women's for a long time.
And the audiobook is voiced by Soulja Boy, right? I think that's true.
That's right.
Look, just download it anyway and see if that's true.
Glenn really collabs with people you don't really
He's been in the game for
expect.
A while. He knows a lot of people. He said, I knew who it was.
No, Glenn is an absolute man. So, go pick up his book.
Does
All
he
right.
even know who Soulja Boy is? It'd be great.
Glenn's locked in.
He's tapped in, bro.
So make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. You can hit like and subscribe on YouTube if you have not yet. Also, just a quick reminder to our listeners. Graham Ruthren of Total Soccer Show created something cool. There's a new fantasy. It's Fantasy United. It's a new app.
You can go check it out. You can download it now. It's on the App Store on Android and Apple. But it's a we have a Cooligans fan zone, so all of our listeners can play. The game is free, and it's basically since MLS Fantasy, like the one from the MLS app, is no longer. It's
well, no, done. Now they use
Kickbase. They're doing something with Kickbase, but I think this is an opportunity to other people are trying to. You know, get anyway, and this is a little bit different than simply just drafting your team and then having them for like the rest of the season. It's a little bit, it's like a mixture of Football Manager and a fantasy thing. So we have a Cooligans fan zone that you can check out. The links are all available on our social, so you can go check that out now.
Winner of our league gets to meet Soldier Boy, which I think is really cool.
We and obviously Glenn Crooks is going to set it up.
I mean, he'll text him for us. I'm excited.
I mean, he's clearly joking just in case there's any issue.
Sometimes I have to enjoy myself.
But we will give a prize to the winner, whether it's a scarf or shirt or something like that.
Let's set up a meet and greet with Soldier Boy.
We will work on it.
Just try.
And we'll see if we can make that happen. The other thing, go to patreon.com/soccercooligans. We have a new weekly show that we're going to be doing, a post podcast episode that we'll be recording. The first one is up right now.
And our guest is Soldier Boy, baby!
Soldier Boy is...
Join the Patreon to see if that's true or not.
Is weighing in all the soccer stories. Patreon.com/soccercooligans. So we have a new show out there that you can check out. So go ahead and do that. All right. Anything else, Alexis, before we go?
Yeah, whatever I got, we're going to save it for the Patreon.
Okay. Take care, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday. Peace.
Love you guys.